I remember one thing that stuck out the most for me in Andras's piece about the Boston bombing, which I think can be dangerous if heard by people who are not on his wavelength, is, and he even sort of stuttered or kind of braced his language when he said it, was a sort of karmic element to the Boston bombing when connecting it to the Jackie Robinson story. Do you know what I'm talking about, Alan?
Oh, yeah. We actually had a long conversation, but he was wondering if he should cut that sentence. He's like, I don't know if that's going to be misunderstood and blah, 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 and that. So, yeah, we had a very long conversation about just that one phrase.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like that was like the bomb that went off in that episode. You hear it through other people's ears and going, ooh, people are not going to take to that well. But you have to understand the context with which he's using it. So, you know, I guess
that's one of those issues that comes with mysticism. I'm sorry to interrupt.
No, I think, yeah, you're right. And I think we all accept that. I don't think really anyone can say something that will just shut one of our, no one can say anything that will shut my mind down and go, fuck that guy. That's completely wrong. You're anti-Semitic, or you're, you know, kind of like a Jan Irvin. You know what? I know who you are. I'm not going to talk to your type. I already get who you're about and what you're about because you said this. And won't even open up a conversation because here's where we start the conversation. I disagree. Let's move forward.
Right. Well, this is an ongoing issue. Not just pulling out the jump to conclusions board, but jumping to one of those conclusions, pulling out a soapbox, standing on it, and then, you know, taking this ultimate position. Because, you know, like, I was looking at it, Andras's thread. He put up a post about some of the ways that SWAT police and whatnot were going house to house and doing this door-to-door business after that that bombing. And people were like, he made such, like, he was being so rational in his approach to what he was expressing. And his article is one thing, whatever, but, like, there's some truth to it. And even if you don't accept it all, it's like, yes, this is being used as an excuse for, you know, Homeland Security and, you know, powers that be to kind of, like, do whatever they feel like. And it's like, not all of that gets justified because there's a tragedy. You still have to follow the guidelines, although, you know, a lot of our rights have changed in the last couple of years. But even beyond that, what it's supposed to be, you know, but there would be people who are like, why are you saying we don't need police? Like, we need law enforcement. Like, I was like, nobody said we didn't need police. Like, there's just this, like, ultimate, like,
I think it, I just don't say it. Sorry. But yeah, like, you're right, no one said it. But
part of, like, goddamn, someone called 911, get a fucking paramedic. Like, Jesus Christ, like, if somebody's, you know, got a hostage and shit, you're like, you know, if you can't take care of it, you're like, this is why police are here, you know. But it's like the overstepping of the bounds that was being acknowledged. And so I said for myself, yeah, we had fucking SWAT police moving through our house with M16s, FBI agents looking under our bed 7 hours after an event that was done, like a helicopter flying over our house over and over again. Why? Because the FBI was called in, and this is what they do. They don't stop, like, until they're sure that it's time to stop, even though it's obvious as hell. They fucking gunned down the guy. You know, there was 40 shots fired a matter of feet from our kitchen. We had to dive to the floor, like, and then 7 hours later, we're having our house rummaged through. Like, where was the terrorism? Like, you know, okay. Like, I felt like this is way over the top, you guys.
Yeah, but I can't say. That's the point where the terrorism, what is terrorism? Striking fear into someone. So if multiple men show up at your house with M16s and say, you know, let us in, we want to look for, you know, evidence, or, you know, is someone hiding in here or whatever it is, a bunch of men showing up in your house with M16s and throwing your state, your normal state of your household, which you consider safe and private and all these things, and putting the fear of multiple automatic weapons into your face, that's terrorism. When you have, you know, here's something with the Boston bombing thing, you know, there was, you know, there's the conversation of, did, you know, there's the false flag angle, right? You know, obviously there's the then there is the extreme conspiracy of it's all fake and there are actors, and I don't go that route. But okay, I'm very open to the idea of a false flag. It's, or at least I'm just very much open to it. These guys certainly don't seem, it just the story of is always seems very, very, very fishy. So I'm just very open to this idea. But even not going from that angle, if even if they are fucking guilty, how come there's no conversation about the fact that there's no Miranda rights for these people? There's no trial. They're just getting fucking gunned down. At what point do we say
– got a hole in his neck.
Yeah. At what point do we say, even if someone is guilty, I don't care if he just murdered 100 fucking people. He gets a trial.
Right.
That is, you know, again, I mean, I'm an anarchist. At some point, you know, this is all kind of nonsense to me. But if we're defenders of the Constitution of America, we're these great patriots. You know, remember, it's fucking Patriots Day, right? Well, if we're these great fucking patriots, we don't want martial fucking law. We don't want trialless executions. No, we don't want terrorism either. But if we don't realize that we have a sense of liberty and security and they have to be balanced, we've forgotten everything that America stands for. Whether or not that's my belief system or not, that is the prevailing argument is, you know, people capture you know, Osama bin Laden and everyone shouts, USA, USA. You know, this is like this great patriotic moment. We got the bad guy. But what is this USA that you're speaking of? Is this a land where we have no Miranda rights, where we have no trials, where we have martial law? I mean, that's...
Now, the Miranda rights were not... And this is quibbling, really.
Oh, you're going to say they're not part of the Constitution.
No. I was going to say, when they were tossing bombs out of their car, is that they're saying... You know, do they become something different in the eyes of the law? Because it seems to me that that's all I've, and like I said, that's quibbling. It's not taking anything away from your argument. But when you know what I mean? Like,
seizure after you've apprehended somebody, there's like this kind of attitude of that there's no trial, there's no jury, they're straight to execution. Like, people are taking this position like people need to be executed.
It seemed like the people needed that, right? The people needed these people to be executed.
Well, sure. And this actually, it supports the conspiracy theory, because then if you can't have a trial, then you can't find out who these people are. It's sort of like, hey, we got Oswald and oops, he's dead. You know, that's what it seems like. But again, even not even taking that angle, I find it just as scary. It doesn't have to be some sort of government-sponsored conspiracy for it to be just as fucking scary, that there's no trial, there's no nothing. You know, we just had a remake of the Judge Dredd movie come out, didn't we? Earlier this year? Well, that's our fucking future if we're not careful. Right? Judge, jury, executioner, all in one.
One, look at that. Boom.
Welcome to the future, assholes. You know, this is... You know, it's not... It's amazing to me because there's, like, you know, I can never tell... This is a whole other territory, but this, you know, the idea of like psyops and stuff, right? I can never tell. Like, I work at a job where I can put on whatever music I want, but obviously I don't have access to like my iTunes collection and things like that there. So I've been listening to a lot of going to YouTube and finding full albums. You know, most of the Pink Floyd albums are up there, a bunch of Zeppelin. There's like a ton of like just great stuff, full album. Some of the more recent stuff, you know, obviously gets pulled down for copyrights, but some of the older stuff, there's still plenty of it out there. And so I just listen to full albums. And these are different things. And it amazes me how often there's arguments in the comment section. I know it's YouTube comment section is a pretty ignorant space, unfortunately, more often than not. But there's always these like arguments of like immigration or racism. And it's like, on what? Like, why is that conversation taking place here? Like, hey, you like Led Zeppelin, I like Led Zeppelin too. Let's talk about illegal immigrants. Like, what the fuck? You know, I guess if it's like the immigrant song, okay. But anyway, that's what makes no sense to me. And it's like where I start to wonder, like, when I'm going to say PSYOPs, meaning very, very specifically, I mean like political propaganda, where the same way you would, if you're a politician, you stir up conversations of, you know, with the Obama election, you stir up conversations of race, even though it's really not an issue. It should not have been an issue in the election. You stir up conversations of religion around Mitt Romney being a Mormon, even though it shouldn't be an issue. If we're really an educated people or a progressive people, then we don't care what color someone's skin is. We don't care what religion they are. Are they the best person for the job or not? So, of course, what has to happen is you have to drum up those fears or those prejudices. It's the same reason why abortion rights become a hot topic every 4 years, because it divides people back into Republican and Democrat. And this is very well documented. Like, there are ways to just push people's buttons. You know, there's never going to be a real major change. Some people believe abortion's good. Some people believe abortion's bad. These are just ways to push people's buttons.
Divide and conquer.
Yeah, exactly. So it's like nothing's ever going to really change. Obama's not going to get out there and be like, free abortions for everyone. You know, that's not going to happen. And Mitt Romney's not going to get up there and be like, no more abortions ever. But you just sort of bring up this topic. Anyway, it's that sort of thing. And that's when I wonder, these really weird, ignorant debates being driven up in these sections, if this is not some sort of political manipulation to kind of keep people in that state.
Yeah,
I'm not claiming that that's what it is. It's just sometimes I think about it. Like, I don't know how much you guys paid attention. Like, even years ago, there was the military hired, and this was public record, military hired a fuckload of people to basically spend their time on social media, to leave comments on blogs, to leave comments on things, to steer certain conversations. This was part of their psychological warfare operation, was hiring thousands of people to sit on Facebook all day and make these arguments about really stupid shit. And at the same time, it's not, again, as I'm open to that, just as I'm open to the Boston bombing being a false flag, but it almost doesn't matter. The reason I bring up this whole thing is today is sometimes I can't get a real sense of what's the true conversation. But this is when you mentioned the Andros thing. This is when you kind of get a sense of the true conversation. If you put something on your own Facebook page and these are your friends you had from high school, or you can watch your news feed and these are people that you know well and they're saying things, that's when you can kind of get a really true sense of where people's minds are at.
This is sort of going towards an idea I had for maybe not always record, but for a sort of for a style of show that could be actually quite good for Saint Book Radio. To have a show where fake structured call-ins from people asking questions that are written by us, almost character driven. So you could have ask the questions that we think people are asking in their heads, But because we don't have a live call-in show, we ask the questions ourselves.
Right.
So
right,
I don't
right.
know if you know, there's a show called The Best Show.
No.
And it's kind of a popular show, but one of the hooks is that people call in and there's like a stockpile of already made characters and already made people who call in, and they kind of comment on what the person who's doing the show. It's just a classic radio bit, right? The fake call-in. But you could really tackle some issues by utilizing that. So like when Andras is doing his thing and he says, Boston's karmic, you could have someone call in and go, what the fuck you mean, pal? What you mean Boston had some karmic retribution? You can sort of alleviate some of your fears, and you can
party.
Right? I mean, is that too out of the box, or is that not dignified?
It seems somewhat undignified, and yet at the same time, it's. I totally get what you mean by it. Yeah, I totally get what you mean by it.
I mean, just it would be highly entertaining if executed, you know, with the right touch.
Of kind of a Andy Kaufman kind of
absolutely
thing.
I mean, because then if this is what we feel is going on in our government with hiring people to jump on Facebook and to kind of stoke the fires of just general conversation, do we feel that we are above that? Do we feel that we're different because we don't utilize that? You know, you can use an agent to damage something, or you can use it to heal. You know what I mean? It's all a matter of how you use the thing. So I've kind of been thinking of, let's put it this way. The thing that I think is missing most from SyncBook Radio as a format is the ability for a listener to interact in real time with the conversation.
Right.
And
right.
This is either accomplished by developing a discussion board, which seems to be just a given, or just a, you know, something that most enterprises utilize, you know.
But even a discussion board would require some sort of live stream.
It would, yeah, which I just think is not going to happen at this point for the development of SyncBook Radio. It's just not. So then because it's, that doesn't mean it's impossible. The way you make that happen is you employ this sort of trick. You become the audience yourself. Instead of relying on your audience to ask the questions that you want them to ask, you just ask them yourself. And you can then, you know, guide the conversation into the sort of nooks and crannies which you think the audience out there wants to know more of.
Now, don't you think that sometimes we do that here just by having the three of us to kind of balance each other out, that sometimes, hey, right now Bill and I are having a conversation or whatever, and David might say, well, what about such and such? You know, it's like, then are we, by always having the third, there's always three people in the conversation. I feel like that kind of adds something to, it's always being steered in a sort of, these different things are getting addressed, or I'm hoping they are, but maybe we can try and be a little more aware of that. Like, not, we don't have to pretend, hey, I'm Bill in Cincinnati. You know, I could just be like, hey, what about
Bill from Cincinnati? You're on the line. Hey guys. You know, I think I've discussed, I think, this with you, Alan and David, is that I hesitate at times to stop either of your sort of, not rants, but where you're going, because I feel sometimes that a question is just hitting the brakes too hard. But I've kind of realized that that isn't necessarily the case, and I've tried to ask more questions, because sometimes Always Record is impenetrable to me, you know? And I don't think that I have done a good enough job of saying, wait a second, you're over my head now, where are we at? You know what I mean? And I think this is the whole thing, is that Always Record is not a format where you want to hit the brakes. Always Record is when you have the jam going, you let it go. Synchronize, or a model of that sort, would be to say, the brakes are stopped. Let's make this a little bit more broad. Let's make this a little bit more accessible. And the problem is how do we identify what is accessible now? Do we know what...
It's a million-dollar question, right?
Right. Yeah, how do we identify where that audience is? I think the way that you find your audience in that regard is to not go from the top down, but to go from the bottom up. And unfortunately, you know, the USA Today is designed to be read at an eighth grade level, right? Which is frightening. Oh, yeah. But really, most people do not take their literacy beyond that because they don't live a life within books. They live a life of experience. So do we start from the eighth grade level and try to build up from there? Because that's where I think you have to start.
Well, and we also run the risk of it's hard because we run the risk, I think, like any if we're having a conversation, it's almost like where NBC, you know, and or somebody, right? We're okay, now we're media producers and we're having a conversation around, we're trying to guess what is our audience really ready for. And what seems to be the case is that more often than not, media institutions sell their audience really fucking short, in that they think everyone's fucking dumb and we can't possibly put out an intelligent show on TV because people wouldn't get it or they wouldn't be interested. And then you sort of over, you know, the series of 30 years, you shape your audience to be exactly that. I get what you're saying of like starting there and building up. Maybe the idea is like, okay, trying to steer this in the other direction. So maybe we can't start going way over people's heads, but we don't just assume that everyone's ignorant, but start a little simpler, start a little more approachable. And then as we go, we can kind of turn the volume up a little bit.
Yeah.
And that's not, for me, that's not even about trying to build, like, you know, when we say about building an audience, let's just be clear what we're saying is like, I think people are interested in what we're doing. It's the reason, I mean, I'm interested in what we're doing. At the end of the day, that's what really matters to me. I can't not do this because I'm interested in what we're doing. And I think it might take 10 years for people to catch on, but hey, that's what the archives are there for. But when we talk about trying to build an audience, it's, I think, trying to show people these other options. And it's not like, you know, your options are mainstream reality, conspiratainment, or Sync, but to say that, you know, Sync is understanding that the mainstream narrative, the conspiratainment narrative, the New Age narrative, the classical metaphysical narrative, and 18 other different bizarre fucking reality tunnels are all accessible at the same time.
Exactly.
Right? Sync is the synthesis of all of that, or the understanding that they all coexist.
It has something in common with theosophy in that way.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely.
How does this all connect? So, like, theosophy would emphasize science and religion. Not only that, but the different sciences and the different religions. It's like a plea to stop compartmentalizing, or at least to take what has been compartmentalized and see where do these connect, and then you extrapolate information from that. And so that seems to be the nature of the purpose behind Sync, not to make it its own exclusive way of looking, but see how the different ways of looking are actually complementary.
So, precisely. Like, okay, so the Fox, taken as the fourth network, they started off by giving us The Simpsons, Married with Children, and these kind of outlandish sitcoms that push the boundaries of acceptability. And the whole purpose of the Fox network was not to give you entertainment or television shows or to sell advertising. The whole point to get a fourth network was to get a fourth news resource, right? And what the way I'm understanding this is that they created their own news universe based around certain assumptions of politics, morality, religion, and whatever. So they created their own square, their own universe, Fox News, because they knew that if you do that well enough, everything that happens in the real world can be filtered through that, and you can distill some sort of truth, or you can be broadcasting what's happening in the universe. Where a conspiracy nut goes wrong is thinking the people behind Fox News are controlling reality. No, they're not controlling reality. They've just built a universe where everything can be filtered through, where you can just make it all seem like that makes sense, right?
I do know what you're saying. Yeah, they're not controlling reality, but they're controlling the way in which you view reality.
Yeah, so they have a million, 10 million, 20 million people who all tune into this box, and now they've got they've carved out their own section of reality. They can sell you products, they can get you to vote a certain way, they can get you to, you know, believe in certain religious things, and that's all that that fourth network did. So a sync network would say sync allows you to transcend politics, religions, mythologies, moralities. It teaches you to see through all of that shit into something that is interconnected through everything. So if you can create a sync network, once you get that to a certain place, people will think the sync heads are controlling the world. No, we're just going to give you a window to sort of see through the Fox universe, the NBC universe, the ABC universe.
I feel like it'll be revealed in time. Like a lot of these things, like it takes years before things come to light. Like you can get information now on things that like at the time people were complete. Like here I'm looking at modern art with a CIA weapon. As a matter of fact, like the people who were actually that the money that funded the initial like modern artists when modern art was popularized, like Pollock and all of that, like the heads of the boards were actually members of the CIA. And like, but the yeah. point, that sounds crazy, but no, this is actually disclosed. Like, I'm not like, this isn't like some radical theory, but it took years for that to come out. It took fucking 50 years, 40 to 50 years before like this came to light. A lot of things are like that. I can only imagine what will come out with Murdoch, you know, 20 years from now, because of what's already come out. And so, yeah.
But wouldn't Fox News be able to take this nugget of information and make you see, because the thing that we don't know is, okay, who are these individuals within the CIA and what was their motivation behind doing this?
And what was the limit of their control?
Exactly. Like a Fox News network would say, see, this is just proof that the government is, you know, doing nefarious things or something, or whatever they want to say. On a sync level, someone could say, some very intelligent person knew that in order to get to move the human race forward as a human race, deepening your understanding of what art is essential to opening up the sort of language areas of the brain. And so I've infiltrated my way into the CIA. I've convinced other people foolishly to give me money, and I'm going to make art. I'm going to put art out there on a high pedestal so that I can infiltrate people's minds through the language of art. It could be a completely...
Wow, that was the craziest theory I've ever heard.
it's a completely crazy theory, but it's... Yeah, we're not inside the brain of the person who put it on the desk. And so it's like, if you can at least think of that angle, you can balance it with the other angles, and it starts to... Because no one knows exactly why that was accomplished. But in like the NBC universe, it becomes apparent that this was like MKUltra, or this was, you know, some kind of nefarious thing.
Well, I think you can still have the idea. I see, to me, the nefarious angle and the human evolution angle are not mutually exclusive. This is the thing that I keep kind of trying to point out, is that so, for example, we know the CIA was interested in LSD, right? The military tried to use LSD. They thought that this could be a truth serum. They thought they could use it to destabilize regions. This was something they were very interested in. The ultimate thing that they learned, or at least publicly learned, and I actually – this is something I do believe that they learned, because this is the nature of the beast, is they couldn't fucking control LSD. There's, you know, it's like, yeah, you can give this to people, but you can't – they're not necessarily going to react the way you want them to react. The same thing with modern art. It's like, you might have thought, hey, we could do something to – make people think in abstractions, and maybe that will destabilize them in some way, or that'll make them more susceptible to our propaganda or our advertising or our whatever. And at some point, other artists come in who didn't take your money and have their own ideas, and the art movement evolves and grows well outside of your control. And you might have had – so you might have had nefarious ideas in mind. Or even quote-unquote good intentions. We have to fight communism, so we're going to promote patriotism through modern art, or, you know, some stupid shit, you know? Like, why did the CIA fund Animal Farm, right? Okay, right. Because we want to show people that socialism and communism are bad. So these are, like, quote-unquote good American patriots who aren't trying to – you know, pull a psyop on their own country. They're trying to help fight communism, blah, 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 blah. So it's like you could have a nefarious angle or a quote-unquote well-intentioned angle. And but then the assumption that any of these things that we do, we control, this is something that I've learned from doing Always Record. You can build the container. You can put all your intentions into it. And then how it's received in the world and how it spreads and how – everything that happens after you've built it, it's like you can, you know, you go impregnate a woman and then she gives birth to this child, and you and this woman raise this child and all this sort of stuff. And then at some point that child goes out into the world. Do you have control over what that thing does? Absolutely not. So you can build the architecture, but you only have so much control over how those events play out.
Damien. Who knows what your Antichrist child is actually going to accomplish and do? It doesn't mean that it's all what the Satanists are hoping for. You know, who knows what'll actually come out of that? Modern baby is CIA weapon.
The language of that. Modern art was CIA weapon.
Check this out. There's a quote here. I'm sorry to interrupt, but I've been waiting to drop this.
Yeah.
There's one of the people involved. He explains their rationale. He says, "We wanted to unite all the people who were writers, who were musicians, who were artists, to demonstrate that the West and the United States was devoted to freedom of expression and to intellectual achievement without any rigid barriers as to what you must write, what you must say, and what you must do, and what you must paint," which was what was going on in the Soviet Union. "I think it was the most important division that the agency had, and I think that it played an enormous role in the Cold War." He confirmed that his division had actually secretly acted secretly because of the public hostility to the avant-garde. Here's the rest of the quote. "It was very difficult to get Congress to go along with some of the things we wanted to do. Send art abroad, send symphonies abroad, publish magazines abroad. That was that's one of the reasons it had to be done covertly. It had to be a secret. In order to encourage openness, we had to be secret." That's fucking far out, because that means the CIA literally paid significant amounts of money to get art spread that was avant-garde.
It's the Onion, right? You know, it's like someone laughs and someone cries because they don't get it. Someone laughs to pretend that they don't get it. Like, yeah, that's genius to buy a work of art for $1 million to get someone to falsely believe and to get that whole market going and to get those ideas across. I think it's fascinating. But I guess, I don't know, it's a weapon. I'm just like hung up on that language. It's silly, but it's beside the point. It's beside the point.
Right. No, it's only a weapon in the sense that you're getting, you're emphasizing how rigid Russia was. So to get people's like, and which is a way to produce actual fear of restraint. So they're like, they're emphasizing that these people are restrained and we're not. And so you want to back us so that they don't want any support whatsoever in any like Russian or, you know, Soviet Union like ideologies. And so that's why you push complete free expressionism, because you're like, these people don't. And so there's a superiority complex that comes with people feeling that we have something that these people can't relate to. It's another way to produce a gulf between us and these people. We don't want to see these people as human beings. We're human beings because we're free in our expression. And so I can see how that term is being pushed.
I guess I think that the thing that scares me about that article is that I think it's a quote in the comments section of that article, someone saying, "See, I told you modern art was nothing but shit. Modern art is just make believe, like that there's no value to modern art. It was just a CIA operation." Like people misreading what the article is saying.
There's zero comments. No one has commented as of yet.
Well, I know what it was. Someone posted that on Facebook, I think.
Oh, I see what they were responding there.
And someone's responding there that was basically saying, "I knew there was no value to modern art, that it was just that modern art was..." They were insinuating that modern art was fake.
Well, it's not that the CIA guys fucking painted the pictures.
Exactly. They put... That's what I think people read into that in a Fox universe. When they say modern art was CIA weapon, the way that they, because they don't go in depthly to it and they don't think about it because they think that Fox News has chewed it up and done the thinking for them. If you just give them that headline, they walk away going, "Well, see, what happened was the CIA paid these people to make these stupid paintings and they brought them overseas and made them look like they were fancy art worth a lot of money. I told you I didn't get modern art, it was because it was stupid." That's what I think, if you condense it into a headline filtered through a network and a network news station, people will walk away from. It will reinforce the opposite reaction. And that's what's the danger, is that modern art, like if you ask people, "What do you think of modern art?" and you show them something, you can learn a lot about a person and how they respond to it and what they feel about it. It's a lot like how people respond to 2001. Or most recently, a movie that I think is just brilliant, Terrence Malick's Tree of Life. You know, people go, "It's boring. I don't get it. It didn't go anywhere. It didn't have a story." That's how most news organizations want to condition people, is that here's something. We're going to tell you what it is. You'll leave feeling an emotion. You'll be scared if it's horror. You'll be excited if it's action. You'll feel melancholy, or you'll feel love. You know, that's what a news organization like Fox News wants you to be like. And if you can, and so like Sync is a Sync network doesn't want you to be on a linear and an objective point. You want them to start integrating a lot of different things. And more than anything, to kind of explore your own personal matrix, right? Not Sophia Stewart's matrix, your own personal matrix, and wherever that may take you. But it should be expansive, and it should be multidimensional.
So, you know, I don't know if you saw Jason Barrera's most recent post over at the Mask of God, but he had this idea. One of the things he put up was a sort of variation of the, you know, if you meet Buddha on the road type idea. And he says, you know, the state, the empire wants you to worship Buddha, but Buddha wants you to figure it out for yourself.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
And it was interesting. So what one of the things that I dropped into that post was a quote from David Koresh. This was during the Waco siege, which, of course, we had the anniversary of, sort of coinciding with everything this week, right? And the guys, the ATF guys who's on the phone with David Koresh, he said after David Koresh had been shot and was bleeding, and they're like, oh shit, what if this, you know, cult leader dies, and what is his suicide cult going to do? Like, they never took the time to try and understand where they were, these people were coming from. So they had built up their whole perception of who these people were, and they're trying to figure out, oh shit, now if their cult leader dies, what are they going to do? Without trying to figure out that they probably weren't like that to begin with. Regardless, so let me just see if I have it here. Basically, Koresh says, so then, like, you know, Koresh says, I don't like being called, I don't like being called a cult leader. It really hurts me. Here we go. Oh, sorry. Sorry, it took me a minute to find it. He says, there's nothing that hurts me more than being called a cult leader, all right? If I'm wrong, people like me don't deserve to live. And then he says, look, they're God's people. I'm just an instrument, okay? I show them out of a book what God teaches. Then it's for them to decide. Not to throw this into a tangent, but just to say, you were talking about how a sync network would be, the idea would be to let people make up their own minds. It just sort of struck me as the right, it's absolutely what we should be trying to do. And it's also the thing that will most likely be the least understood or most misunderstood way to do things.
Yeah, totally. Well, there's a built up resistance to looking at something at, just as a plain picture. There's that Bob Dylan quote where he's saying you're not going to get the truth from reading Newsweek or Time or any of these magazines. He's being interviewed by somebody. He goes, that's none of that's really the truth. And the guy asks him, he's like, well, what is really the truth? And he says, everything in the truth is just a plain picture. So if you just have, you know, and it's like, that's the biggest challenge. You know, I can't help but I'm looking at your article that you put up, Alan.
It was so weird because when we were talking about, it's actually a really weird sync. Is I've done this radio show twice. I've been a guest on a radio show called Truth Frequency Radio, and I really don't speak to them very often. I've spoken to them twice in the last however many years, and last time I did their show, an offer was made to me. They were going to develop a broadcasting network, and so that they could be still stay independent. Did I want a show on their network? And we never really had much of a conversation. I said I would think about it, and I honestly never really followed up on it. But when Bill was saying about having live call-ins, the thought went through my mind. Hey, there's those people had offered me that thing, and maybe that's a space where if they have the infrastructure where they can do live shows, maybe that's someone to contact. And about 3 minutes later, Cherie from Truth Frequency Radio sends me a message on Skype. So it's really weird. I thought about her for the first time in months, and she just sent me a message. And it's just a link to this story on their website saying New York Times claims surviving bomber was a 9/11 truther. And all these different, and the article goes on from there. What did you see there that struck you?
Well, I'd seen that said, along with, somewhere in Andras's thread. And it's just so classic. It's like, it feels to me like these people are getting, for people who aren't as familiar with like 9/11 truthers, people who aren't it's like they feel like there's a lot of negativity in that, and that they're not patriotic or that they're anti-American or something. And it's like, of course he is. Like, just like, of course, Holmes is like a sink head. You know what I mean? It's like this representational head. Of course he does something fucking terrible that gets people to just, they're like, oh, it's like reinforces any inclination that there's nothing to something, or that you're a fucking wacko if you even consider this kind of ideas. And of course these ideas are not necessarily like helpful to certain powers that be. And so like, it's just all too ironic. It's like, and then that gets emphasized. It's not just that it's there, it's that it gets thrown around so that there's this correlation between 9/11 truther and terrorism, that they're the terrorists. Somebody that's saying that, you know what I mean? Like, it's like, it's
exactly. Yeah. But because that's the only way that you could do it, right? Because it's basically some event happened. 9/11 happens. All right. These buildings blow the fuck up. Lots of people die. And 9/11 truther points the finger at the FBI, CIA, and says, look, those people did it. So then the CIA, FBI turn around and go, look, those people did it. It's the right. It's like a third grade. We joked about bringing this down to an eighth grade reading level. This is, you know, first grade, third grade tactics of, you know, I'm made of rubber, you're made of glue type thing, where it's just like, no, I'm not. You are, I know you are. What am I? This type shit or something like that.
Yeah, totally. And I say for every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction.
Mm-hmm.
It's just the way things are. But then human beings are something else. This is like what got acknowledged in Vipassana. It's that like human beings are a really interesting thing because, you know, like, well, for example, my teacher had said at one point that yoga was against nature. And that really bothered me. And I never understood what it took me a long time to kind of get what he was expressing in that. It's that nature has a certain tendency towards opposite, like for action and reaction. What a state, what an enlightened state is not participating, to going to a deeper level. You can bring yourself to a place where you're recognizing that way that things play out and kind of take a completely different approach because things have a certain inertia. You can transcend that inertia. People very, very, very rarely experience that kind of transcendence, but it's possible. Like human beings have that capacity. I don't think we're the only ones, though that's the way it generally gets argued. I don't know if whales are taking any position in relationship to anything. They feel like they're holding down the planet to me. Dolphins, too, for that matter.
Silly animals.
I don't know. Do you get what I'm expressing there?
I
absolutely.
Think
yeah, it's because if nature, is every action has an equal and opposite reaction, but then yoga is trying to have some sort of harmony between the two instead of them, you know, almost butting heads or doing things oppositely to do things in synthesis. And then there's the sort of transcendent state where you see that both of those things are kind of the same thing, where it's the equal and opposite reaction is almost what's creating the spin of the yin-yang sort of synthesis in itself. Do you know what I mean?
Right. Completely. And so that's what feels like what's being expressed with tarot and the archetypes is that what is the underlying principles behind the yin and the yang? How is this circle? Like when you play, it's not just like the tarot tableau, but when you do Hero's Journey, right, where you have this ellipsis that if you have the Crowley deck, you have the Fool on one side, then you have Lust, Strength on the other, and then it comes back around. You have this wheel that's constantly going it's like this drama is playing out over and over and over again. Yet in the midst of that drama, there is an underlying, there's an archetypal reality behind the appearances that we're seeing. And then behind that, there's another, and behind that, there's another, and you can go to subtler and subtler levels. But behind it all is just energy. And the energy is completely universal. And that if you were to bring your attention deep enough, you could actually not participate in the play, which seems to be like the essence of Buddhism and of getting off the karmic wheel. And so, like, and then it's happening on a collective level. It's happening on a personal level, and it's happening on a collective level. What we're seeing here with this 9/11 truther is it happening on a collective level of just this, like, dog-eat-dog survival of the fittest kind of perception of evolution, which might not have anything to do with evolution. We not might be any more evolved than anything else. We're just more complex. It doesn't mean progress. It just means change, you know? If it meant progress, the planet would probably be a lot healthier.
Hey, this is kind of a tangent, which I apologize for, but do either of you have Google Chrome as your browser?
I do not.
David?
No.
No, I don't either, so I'm trying to find you an image. But at my work computer, that's what they use. And it's fascinating because you guys have a YouTube account?
Yeah.
I think YouTube has the same thing now. Basically, the new Google feature, right, where you have let me start at the beginning. There's that's too big of a tangent. I'm sorry. I'm having this idea of where the evolution of language. I'll just very quickly say, if we want to go down this road, we can just very quickly say, I had this realization the other day that fonts are a massive, massive evolution of language. Because we talk about how the written language creates this sort of linear narrative. You have, this is the Gutenberg galaxy and et cetera. But when you see the word dog, you have all your connotations of what that word means. However, when you see that word dog written in a particular font, you can suddenly have a whole other slew of associations. So you can convey a million times more information with an appropriate font and a word. That the unification of the two, or the variations on those things, where something written one way, it looks like a horror movie. Written one way, it looks like this, or like this, or like this. And there's all these built-in associations and things that we take with that. Now, this can be on a very intentional level. We can use this in a good way. Then we have the more subtle things, which maybe dig into deeper archetypes, which everyone might not be familiar with. And this is the new Google customization bar. They have this thing. If I sign into YouTube, I might be able to see. Basically, you know where you might have like a thing like drop down tab on different browsers. There might be something that you can click on something to customize your settings. And they just have their icon is three horizontal bars, one on top of the other. And I'm at my job and I'm looking at this thing and I'm like, that's a trigram from the I Ching. It's just three solid lines. And this is the trigram of heaven, which is the masculine. This is the most masculine trigram. What's interesting is if you actually hover over that on Google Chrome, what it comes up is says customize and control your internet experience. So here you have the male energy coming in to exert control over the experience. And it was just sort of really interesting to me. And I was, this is a little bit of a out of left field type thing, but it's this idea of trying to figure out how to balance such a thing. So if you have the masculine energy, where's the feminine? And this is where my mind was going. So when you talk about this idea of trying to create some sort of harmony or synthesis between the two, this is where my mind just was. And I don't know if that does anything for you guys, but that's sort of where
that ties into what we were talking about before you jumped on. I was basically expressing that one big insight that I've had before, but I think I went to a much deeper level to it, was how art, like, you know, you have the Orwell quote that all art is propaganda. Well, I was contemplating
I was just going to say that wasn't Orwell, but yeah.
I'm pretty sure it was. I looked it up a couple times. I was told it wasn't, and then I looked it up, and it was, and then I was told it wasn't, and I think it is. Anyways, whatever.
Doesn't matter. Sure.
Point being that art itself is an aversion to the deeper states that are achieved, if for lack of a better word, when one concentrates and follows the stream of sensation. So if you feel sensation, you're like, if you put out your hand and you feel the energy in your hand, you know, you can do that throughout your whole body. And that's what Vipassana is. So you can get to deeper and deeper places with that, where you can feel the circulating energy, and it's very real, moving through your body. It's like, it's just, we have a subtle body. Right. And this is referenced everywhere. Like, it's the meaning of the Ankh. It's the tree of life itself. It's the subtle body. That's why you have to till the soil before you can get to the tree. It's that, you know, something stiff and rigid. You have to get to a place where you can be in touch with your inner reality. And this isn't a thinking thing. And so thought itself can express itself in almost like a very hallucinatory way, or a visionary way, as a reaction to one going to these deeper states. And so the further you go into the energetic experience, the more elaborate the thought process becomes, and instantaneous the thought process becomes, because it's there as a distraction from progressing into realms. But that being said, it could be argued with that art itself, oftentimes the more extreme the expressionalism, or the more profound the expressionalism, the more one has gone, allowed oneself to go into these states, because that's just the mind's reaction to them. And so it ties into language itself, because the degree of imagination gets refined the more one meditates in this way. And so, you know, you look at like graffiti and what people can do, like when you know, put a piece out there, you're writing, essentially, you're just, and the more, you know, entwined or complex, the piece, the more it calls up for somebody, you know, the more perfect it feels, you know? And so that itself is almost like bleeding through the cracks of a rigid society, where we cover everything in concrete and try and cover up all life from coming out of the soil. We make roads and we build structures. And we do all this shit for a reaction to that to be graffiti. Feels like it's another level of that same principle, where we in ourselves are trying to move away from our subtle body by building rigid personality structures, which gets expressed in society as fucking concrete urban jungles, right? And then kind of the graffiti is almost like the subtle experience bleeding through the cracks of that, and people needing that. And so, but then even beyond that, that is stemming from this other reservoir. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I see a direct correspondence, to what I was saying, like the idea of, you're talking about the concrete and sort of putting this subtle art over it, but I see even that the language itself as being the concrete, and the customization of the appearance of that language being the move to these more transcendent spaces. So so like the word is the concrete, you know, when you just see the word dog. And then if you can customize it and add all this extra meaning or emotion to it, as very much graffiti does. So graffiti and these computer fonts are essentially interchangeable ideas, yeah.
Would you say that sort of like the six line unbroken hexagram, the first one, force, in the I Ching, is a concrete structure, but then the graffiti that you can apply to that would be, for the thing I've been kind of working on lately, is Philip K. Dick's association with it as zebra, the stripes of a zebra, or the bars of a black iron prison. That these are the graffiti, these are the very fine sort of things that sort of bleed through originally, which is just the six unchanged lines of a hexagram.
I love right. the idea of zebra as the lines of the I Ching. That's genius.
Totally. Especially like Life of Pi with the zebra with the broken leg on the boat. But anyways, I would say that there's another level to it, because when you have the yin and the yang, you have an interplay. But transcendent to that is something else. So like heaven and earth are ultimately two sides of the same thing. Yet there's a directional force even beyond it. And that's kind of what I'm saying, that both of those expressions are an aversion to. And the two are like back and forth off of each other. But then there's an underlying reality in the midst of that, almost like the two dots on either side that are like one is in the other and one is in the other. Like that these are two interlocked. They're like the two serpents of the caduceus, right? But then the pole itself, or the field that they're taking place within, is like energy, and it's universal. They have the same thing within each other, and there's this other underlying thing that's there that's unnameable. And so I would say that both of those expressions are ultimately an aversion. One is more open, kind of opening oneself to that. And then the other one is a further resistance to that. And so they're a continuum.
Yeah, no, I'm right there with you. I think that's, you're saying it exactly kind of how I've envisioned that. So then you can see like something that you would say the mark of the beast is the barcode, but then you can also see in that, you can see your six unbroken lines, and you can see your zebra, you know, in 1 minute, the barcode is the black iron prison. It's the mark of, you know, oppression and imprisonment. But then just subtly embedded within it is your zebra standing right there, ready to sort of allow you to escape. But it's just a subtle twist of your perception. And you should never get locked into that perception, because really all it is a hexagram. All it is a force. And it's something that is sort of benign, ultimately, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm having something come up, and I don't know. I can't help it. I have this going here. You mentioned the beast, and that person who does the subliminal synchrosphere or something along those lines, who there was some little sinky funny sewing circle drama going on with, he had said something on that post, if I recall correctly, that the book of Damien, the Omen 2, was actually written by what's her name, I'm trying to say Sharon Tate, but it's not Sharon Tate, Pharaoh, Mia Farrow's dad. He had said that on, he had made that claim, as I recall. And I was like, what the fuck? Cause I stopped later on, and I was thinking about it. I'm like, of course, Damien, doesn't he have 666 on him, like as a birthmark? So then he's the beast. And what is it? It's a crow, right? It's a crow. So then you have Crowley. I don't know. I was tripping out on that. Are you guys looking that up right now? I was trying to.
So not the movie, but the book.
Book, supposedly. I don't know. Damien, see the book on here, so
David Seltzer wrote The Omen.
But The Omen too.
Is Joseph Howard.
Probably not. See, I don't, he said that though. I'm pretty fucking sure. I could be wrong, so don't get pissed at me, mister, if I'm quoting you incorrectly. saw that and I was like, whoa. I was like, that can't be. Because then he shows John Cusack is in The Raven or whatever. And then he just says, who does it look like he's embodying then? Mr. JC. So, but yeah, I don't know. I'll have to look up before I need to go back to his thing and see what he actually said. Subliminal synchrosphere.
So, but I could go the other way with it. Mia Farrow's father is John Farrow, an Australian film director. And then
okay.
We can kind of look to see what he...
It's funny, I put in subliminal synchrosphere and the first thing that comes up on Bing is the sync book always record. How is that possible? A reference to it here. It's on our thing. It is actually what the first thing to come up. Small world in the synchrosphere.
Okay. Mia Farrow's dad wrote a book called Damien the Leper, which is a biography of Damien of Molokai. It was a book written in 1937. So he did write a book called Damien, but not like about the Antichrist. It probably was a sink.
Okay,
hey, Mia Farrow's dad wrote a book about Damien. So I just went to Mia Farrow, looked to see who her dad was, looked at her dad, and then looked to see what he's written.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm looking on Wikipedia, he's got a ton of writing credits and directing credits and stuff like that, but I'll just drop it in here. John Farrow is his name. And if you look under John Farrow on Wikipedia and you look up under books, you'll see a book called Damien the Leper.
The leper, huh? That's interesting because Jesus goes around curing the lepers. Antichrist is Damien.
He goes around giving people leprosy.
Yeah. I'm looking at his incredible fucking blog, dude. This is like one of the best. And it's all this stuff that's like we're all focused on. Like, and there's pieces in here that were my personal aha moments, and then he just shows them. And so I'm just like, wow, that's like either he had them too, or he's just been really looking at everything we've all been doing.
You know, I just read someone, a blogger, had put up a blog post that was sort of their throwing their hat into the wild, weird world of The Shining recently. And as I was reading it, I just was starting to get angrier and angrier, which was just stupid for me to get angry, you know? Because, and I'm not saying this is what you were saying, David, but it was just that, and it wasn't even my material, it was just that the blog was just so, it just seemed like a huge collage of every single blog I had read over the last 4 years, right? And that this blogger was kind of be like boldly going out there and saying, I think there's a little something more to this film called The Shining. And really, that's not what he was doing at all, right? He was just this kind of meeting the mystery and attempting to make sense of it at the blog for the first time. And I don't think that all bloggers need to be very, very, be like a reference Nazi. You know, every little thing that you've read somewhere else, you don't have to say, and this came from here, this came from here, this came from here. Because ultimately, how do you remember it all? First of all, that's absolutely true. But ultimately, if there's someone else writing about these mysteries and writing about them intelligently, ultimately, I think most of us believe that thinking about Kubrick or dissecting Kubrick is just basically a road to better critical thinking. And the more critical thinkers out there, the less whatever evil is out there trying to make us less educated, the less power they have over us. Because if we're critically thinking, we're having better conversations and we're moving forward instead of moving backwards. So ultimately, why would I get upset if this person didn't put their references out? The only reason I would be upset would be if this person would have, you know, all of a sudden on David Letterman, they would have this person out as a guest, and it would be like the whole nation said, thank you for enlightening us, which is just not going to happen, you know. It still doesn't take away that initial surge of anger I had at this person's blog. And I think we had sort of touched upon that with the subliminal synchrosphere and our little sewing circle, was that certain people kind of felt that, you know, he just ripped that off from such and such, or they took that from my blog.
Just for example, there's a number of them, but one was that I'm watching Poltergeist, like, and I see that the fucking TV is 2:37 at the moment that the spirit comes out, if you look really closely. And I was like, wow, that's crazy. And then I immediately contacted Jason Barrera and I sent him a private message saying, dude, you got to watch Poltergeist. I'd be really interested in what you find in Poltergeist. And the next thing I know, within the next month, there's all this stuff coming up everywhere around Poltergeist. And I'm like, yeah, I know, like, there's 100th monkey kind of thing, or like something, like someone has a thought and then, you know, whatever. But it was like, no, like all of a sudden the focus was on Poltergeist. Not only that, but on comparing Poltergeist and The Shining, which is what I told him, as I recall in the message, like that's what I was connecting it to. Is I was like, Shining, Poltergeist. And there's just so many correspondences there. But then if I look at this subliminal synchrosphere, it's like emphasis on Poltergeist. You know, I mean, it's a number of months later, but Poltergeist is out there. You know, there's a lot of movies out there. It's just interesting that that became incorporated to the degree that it did. And he shows like a close-up of that the television says 2:37. And I'm like, yeah, okay. Well, I mean, I talked about it on here and I pointed
David,
it out.
David, don't you also have it on your blog? I thought you had that image on your, or a similar image on your blog.
Sure, with my cell phone, and then uploaded it and then put it, photoshopped it next to room 237.
Right.
I believe it's 37, but it's just, it's awesome. I really like it. I'm excited to like read through his deal, and I'm sure he's like, I can tell he's done a whole lot of thought around all of this stuff and been really immersed in it. It's something else.
Yeah, I think you had mentioned about trying to bring him onto the show. He'd be someone I'd be very interested to speak to. Whereas even though I obviously don't agree that this is some sort of Masonic revelation of the method or whatever, that he called it out as, I certainly have sympathy for that space, you know, that headspace. And I think he's doing great work. So
I'm open to that. I mean, I feel on some level that that's happening in the midst. I mean, a lot of these people are into, the different occult schools of thought, like that.
Absolutely. I mean, that's my thing, though, is that, you know, Bill, I think it's actually Bill has made me kind of shift my thought on that a little bit when he said, everyone who watches a film understands if it's a Christ figure. Oh, this person is the Christ figure in this movie. And we don't say it's this massive Christian conspiracy to keep throwing Christ into everything. We just go, oh, okay, that's like an archetype we all recognize. Or a religious imagery that we just are, for everyone in the West is familiar with, and we all just accept as, oh, okay, every artist is just picking up on some of that, or you are intentionally using some of that. But like, you know, I think it's like Jerry Bruckheimer or somebody, like his studio logo is lightning striking a tree. That's pretty clear what that's a reference to. Or so I would assume, if that's intentional, right? Lightning coming down a tree? if that's intentional, that's a pretty clear indication of this is where my head is at while I'm making this stuff. I don't, but I, you see, the difference being, I don't be like, oh, that person's therefore affiliated with some satanic cult or trying to brainwash people into their new world order. It just seems like this is something I, you know, this is something they're interested in. Okay.
Yeah.
It's good. It, you know, it's good. Right. Like, yeah. So it's like, at the same time, sure. Yeah. You know, you can, like, again, not mutually exclusive. You could have people who are like, oh shit, you're into, you know, oh, you're a Freemason, I'm a Freemason. Hey, let's make sure that we get all the, you know, blacklist some non-Freemasons or promote each other's work or et cetera, you know, whatever it might be. Or put out, so let's say, for lack of a better term, propaganda that promotes perhaps a political agenda we have outside of our artwork. But again, the idea that all art is propaganda, of course. So the guy who's, you know, the Hindu filmmaker, I expect that his films will be influenced by his faith and probably be somewhat propaganda for his worldview. The guy who's into Kabbalah, I expect that it will use some of that imagery and probably be some propaganda for his worldview, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So I don't really see it. It's more like this just completely open conspiracy of like, yeah, it's, you know, of course people do that. You know, no one says like, oh my God, did you see Mel Gibson made a movie where he has this guy on a cross? Like, it's just, it's not an issue. Why would someone using other occult systems in their films be a conspiracy if we don't think that Mel Gibson making a movie about Jesus is a conspiracy? That's all I'm trying to say.
Right. You know, Scott Onstott makes the point, a specific point, when he's going over his explanation for why just the this particular archetype that's being expressed symbolically with the buildings and how it relates to the duat, one part of the sky, right? And basically emphasizes that it's possible that these people are, when these are being designed, there's a belief that you can draw down energy from that specific part of the sky to assist or aid you in the success of what you're attempting to build. And so, of course, the great work itself becomes, I mean, that's an extension of, or that the great work extends from that phenomenon of basically even beyond the duat, just taking what's above and imbuing what's below with the energy from it. So almost what you're creating is like a temple to that. And so I think that it could be argued that some of the consistent things that are going on when you go through the specific way that aligning, in many cases, it seems in line with that idea of that it's like God is aiding our enterprise, so to speak. And so if you look at the production companies, of course it's Columbia, of course it's TriStar and Lionsgate and these things that have these you know, either references to the zodiac or references to constellations. Like, I mean, we drive a Subaru, you know. It's like, I don't know, it's just it feels like there's something to that argument. But then I feel like simultaneously this is something that you can't escape from. And that's kind of the joke of what's being expressed by Kubrick with his like references to the duat and to these archetypes, is that you can't, even if you know about it, even if you know you're the one who kills your father and fucks your mother, what do you know? You did it anyway. And that these artists could be very hip to it. Doesn't matter how hip to it they are and how much they include it consciously, it's going to happen on top of that even more so. And so it's just that there's this pool taking place. So yeah, that's.
I think that's incredibly well said, because that's the kind of issue here. Like you mentioned, like a car, like yeah, we have cars named Saturn, you know, like which is always a weird thing to me. Like that was that's a very controversial sort of archetype to align yourself with, but you know, whatever. Like so, there are sort of like really explicit things. There are, I think. On Cracks in the Wall, Steve Wilner and Will 777, he had the conversation like, why are people naming like oil rigs? It was during like the Gulf of Mexico oil spill. He's like, why would people name an oil rig after like some pre-diluvian god? You know, like what the hell? Why would you even do that? And this is the idea that. There's multiple ways to, of course, take that, but I'm with you. It's like we can try, and I think this is – we have sort of two directions we can experiment, and I feel that I sometimes alternate experimenting with. One being, how do you break out of that? So like you can be aware that you're doing it. Do you then try to write the most original thing that breaks out of all those archetypes? And then if you realize that you're still spewing out these archetypes and you're still telling the same stories, do you make yourself aware that, all right, if I'm going to use them anyway, let me at least use them intelligently? You know, let me at least have something, you know, let me contain this and, you know, put some sort of structure around this. Or those seem to be the two directions that someone could – if you're an artist or even, I guess, a car company or you're a company that's making giant oil rigs in the Gulf of Mexico, those are your two choices. It's like, do you call it something, you know, do you name it after your great-grandmother's dog, or do you name it, you know, like try and do some crazy shit?